Evolution's most cherished icon, called The Dinosaur Delusion. In that book, it's, I don't know the exact page number, I'm guessing 180 to 200 pages, maybe a little bit more. We've tried to pack it full of information, of evidence, and there is a lot in that book that I didn't have time to get to. In fact, you know, I could talk about the subject of evolution of dinosaurs for probably 4 or 5 hours, and would love to have that opportunity, but most people really don't really want to know 4 or 5 hours. At least they may not want to sit in lectures that entire time about that. But yes, there's a lot of it. There are some of those petroglyphs and pictographs, rock carvings and paintings that I showed you. They've been found in different places around the world, not just in Cambodia and southwestern part of the United States. They've been found in South America, Central America, in Europe. A lot of other... I will tell you this, and this is... Please understand, hear me out. This is not proof of one way or the other. It was an interesting story I came across a few weeks ago. There was a gentleman who claimed that they had found a human footprint next to a dinosaur footprint. Whether it was or not, I don't know. I didn't look deeply into that. But he fully believed that this is a dinosaur fossil footprint along with a human. And it looked exactly like a human footprint in the same layer of rock right there together. And he said, yeah, he believed it was. And here was his explanation. He said, no, I believe in evolution. Evolution, hundreds of millions. You know, humans didn't live hundreds of millions of years ago. That's evolution says that. And so he explained how he believed that was a human footprint. Here was his answer. Oh, I believe in time travel. Time travel's already been invented, so they traveled back in time, obviously. And I mean, it was like obvious they walked with the dinosaurs because they traveled back in time. I'm scratching my head thinking, so there are people who would actually believe we've already, that time travel is legitimate, and it's already been discovered and been perfected, and they've traveled back 70 million years, and they ran around with the dinosaurs, and then they left back to the future, and that's where those footprints came from. They're more readily to believe that than to believe in the creation of man and dinosaurs. I think we had a question here, and then I'll go over here. Yes, ma'am. Okay, on this specific one of Ardipithecus rhombatus cadaba, from what I understand, based upon this article, I think if you go to our website and you type in Ardipithecus rhombatus cadaba, you'll see various articles that have come up. From what I understand, they only found 11 fossil specimens of this one, and only one of them was the toe bone of this one. Now, there are other specimens, you might say, like, for example, have you ever heard of Lucy? Australopithecus afarensis is the scientific name, I believe, for Lucy. Now, Lucy is probably the most... how can I word this? They found more fossils of Lucy, from what I understand, than probably about any other alleged human ancestor or alleged ancestor of humans. And so you'll hear more about Lucy than about any of them. In fact, here in this textbook, you can read, I think they talk about Lucy. Here it is. The first human-like ancestors, Australopithecus. And so, you know, we don't have any problem. If that's how many fossils they found of Lucy or Australopithecus afarensis, so be it. The thing is, all of these fossils of our alleged ape-like ancestors, they can fit into two categories. Here they are: human and animal, human and ape, human orangutan, human monkey, human and some other animal. And there is a lot of criticisms, even by evolutionists, that Lucy is not a human or a human ancestor at all. And they go through various, not in this textbook, but there are a lot of scientists, including some of the ones that I've worked with in the past, who have shown the evidence that, wait a minute, Lucy's wrist locked like apes lock. Lucy had hips that could not, that were too narrow, and thus Lucy wasn't even a female. They're now saying that Lucy was probably a male and not a female. So some people nickname Lucy Lucifer, and a lot of other things. So here is the thing about a lot of the evidence of evolution. I don't disagree that they found these fossils. There have been hoaxes throughout history, but are these legitimate fossils? Probably so. But here is the difference. They contend, well, this is a human ancestor. I contend they're fossils from the fossil record of something living sometime in the past, as a creationist and person who believes in the biblical account of creation, I believe thousands of years ago, and there's no proof that this animal ever evolved into a human. Good question. I think we had one right here. Yes, ma'am. That's a good question. Exactly. That's a good question. Now, I will say this to I don't want to, with a, just a brush stroke, just say that all evolutionists have believed that. That was just one particular man who said that, and I was like, oh, wow. But you've asked some very good questions today, young lady. Earlier you asked a good one. Did we have a question over here? Yes, sir. That's a very good question. And the short answer is, we don't know how long they were in the garden before sin entered the world. When you read Genesis chapter 2 and you see that God brought all of the animals in front of Adam and he named them there in Genesis chapter 2, and then he saw that there was not a helper for him, I believe fully that Genesis chapter 2 is dealing with those events that happened on day 6 of creation, and that on day 6 God had him go into a sleep, and that from his rib he created woman, so that Adam and Eve were there, I believe, on day 6 of creation. And then sometime later, we don't know how long. We know that Adam only lived, that is not a good way to say it, that Adam lived 930 years, if I remember correctly. And so we know for sure it was far earlier than that that he sinned. And I tend to believe it wouldn't have been too long after they were created in the garden, but I don't think we can know for sure. I do think that one of my colleagues has addressed it on the Apologetics Press website. I don't remember exactly what his conclusions were. This would have been several years ago. There may be some indicators here that I just cannot recall off the top of my head. Yes, sir. I believe it was when they were created. I mean, just I don't read anything here that says that the fall, that is when their life started. That's when their number of years started. And I realize if they had remained in the garden and continued to eat of the tree of life, they would fully believe they would have continued to have lived. But I don't see anything in here that would demand us to interpret that their life or their age started there after they ate of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Those are very good questions. Some of those I don't know the answers to. What I do know is God made Adam and Eve, and he made them in the garden. He made them to be able to eat of the tree of life. They fell. Exactly how long after their creation they fell, I don't know for sure. Yes, ma'am. I believe so. I mean, I don't know that every animal that God created on the earth had to walk before him, but I tend to believe that. Keep in mind this. The kinds of animals there were thousands of years ago is the word kind is a broad term to refer to. For example, I don't believe that Adam had to name the grizzly bear and the Kodiak bear and the black bear and the Asian bear. I believe that there was the bear kind, and so he named it bear, but he didn't name it bear, of course. There was the English language. He named it whatever language he was speaking at that time. And yes, fully believe that Adam would have seen dinosaurs, and dinosaurs would have been named by him, as well as lions and as well as the dog kind, which may very have been some kind of wolf, or, you know, animals that can interbreed are of the same kind, you know. All the different cows that can breed, they're of the cow kind. Dogs of the dog kind. I don't know a whole lot about coyotes and wolves and things like that. From what I understand, they can, you know, that grizzly bears and polar bears can breed. There was a gentleman who killed a bear. They wound up calling it a pizzly bear because it was a mix between polar bear and a grizzly bear. In nature, they had bred. Yes. Great question. Does the Bible address continental drift or Pangaea? I don't think that the Bible specifically ever addresses that. There are some who claim that in Genesis chapter 10, that in verse 25, that there is an allusion to that, where it says that in Peleg's day, the earth was divided. Some people think that. I believe that is referring to the languages that were divided. Genesis chapter 11, verse 1, the whole earth had one language and one speech. So I believe the earth being divided had to do with the languages. That said, I don't think creationists or Christians have any problem believing that there may have been, that there has been continental drift, or there used to be Pangaea, one continent, supercontinent. And I don't have any problem believing that, though, as I was talking to our good sister at lunch, that I don't understand, you know, I don't know for sure when all of that happened. Here is what I do know. And I mentioned this at lunch to some individuals. I do know that on day three of creation that God said He made the land to appear up out of the water. So all of a sudden you have no land, and on day three God said, let there be land, and wow, the land came up. There was a ton of geologic activity according to Genesis chapter 1 and verses 9 and following on day three of creation. Now, and then you have during the flood, you have the fact that in Genesis chapters 6 and following, that the Bible says all the fountains of the great deep were broken up. Now, that is just a small little snippet about some type of geologic activity. So, does the Bible specifically address Pangaea or continental drift? No, it does not, not to my knowledge. But can I see that there would be examples of times in history where God would have radically changed the earth in different places? Yes, and so I do not believe that there's any evidence for this long, well, just because the, let me just say this, just because continents might be drifting today at an inch every so many years, that doesn't mean that the continents have always been drifting for that number, for that much for millions of years. It's the idea is known as uniformitarianism. And a lot of people interpret the present, interpret the past based upon the present. And so if they see the continents drifting so many centimeters every so many years today, they assume that, well, if that's the way, if that's the how it's drifting today and that's how long it's taking it, then we can go back so many millions of years and then bam, we can know that they once were all together in a supercontinent. Well, they're assuming that the continental drift has always been exactly at the same rate. And you can't assume that, because there have been catastrophes in the past. Genesis chapter 1, as far as day 3 of creation, it wasn't necessarily a catastrophe, but if you were there that day and all of a sudden, if you were out in a boat on day 3 of creation and you saw these mountains just coming up out of the water, that would look pretty catastrophic to you. And certainly if you were there in the flood, that was a catastrophe. Yes, sir. Exactly. Good point. The dating methods that our gentleman mentioned here in regarding evolutionary time, radiometric dating, radiocarbon dating, but especially radiometric dating, is based on a lot of assumptions that the rate of a decay of one element into another element, like uranium into lead. Well, supposedly that rate of decay, this decays into this element and so much of this element over millions of years. Okay? And it may be decaying at this particular rate today, but just because it's decaying at this rate today doesn't mean it was decaying at that rate thousands of years ago. Again, for those of you, I was talking to you about this at lunch or maybe right before this session. I was talking to Dr. Mary Schweitzer, who had found that T-Rex bone and discovered that there was soft tissue in it. And I asked her, I said, knowing that radiocarbon dating, which is different than radiometric dating, that radiocarbon dating, evolutionists themselves know that that doesn't prove evolution because it's only good at dating things that are hundreds or thousands of years old and not millions of years old. I asked her, I said, well, why don't you use radiocarbon dating on it and test it and see what it says? She says, oh, we wouldn't do that because radiocarbon dating can't date anything that is that old. Well, I said, how do you know it's that old? Well, it's found this layer of rock. Well, I said, why don't you just date it and see what it says? See if it'll say it's hundreds or thousands of years old. And here was her response. If I remember correctly, it's been a few years ago since I had this conversation with her. She said, well, even if we did use radiocarbon dating and it did date it being a few thousand years old, that would only mean that that bone had been contaminated. Thought that was interesting, and here's why. Because that's the exact same thing we tell them in regard to radiometric dating. We say, okay, you may have dated that rock according to your assumption-based methods, and you say they're millions of years old, but guess what? Not only has the rate of the decay, could you not, you cannot prove and say for sure that it's been the same all these years, but number two, maybe it's been contaminated, such as during the flood or some catastrophic event. Yes, ma'am. That's a great question. My answer to that, number one, would be that evolution, according to evolutionists themselves, evolution cannot be true unless they have many millions of years. So what I mean is this. If they can't say it happened millions of years ago, then they can't believe in evolution. I have a slide, if I can get to it tomorrow morning in the Bible class period, I want to show why we ever even address, to some extent, the age of the earth. And the reason is because evolutionists have admitted that if the earth is relatively young, measured in thousands of years and not millions or billions of years, then evolution cannot be true. So number one, they talk about millions of years because they have to in order for it, they say, to be true. My contention is, even if the earth was millions or billions of years old, which I do not believe it is, you still can't get, we've still never seen life come from non-life. We've never seen something come from nothing, and so I don't believe it could be true anyway. And then the other reason is some of the things we were just mentioning about some of their assumption-based dating methods that are used. They would say, prove that this earth is that old. Other problems with their dating methods is a lot of times their dating methods contradict each other. They will use one dating method that says this many millions of years and another dating method that says that many millions of years, testing something, maybe the same rock, and yet they'll get very different answers. So there's contradictions there. Good question. Is that a hand raised right there? I saw your hand do this right here. It's like, I'm thinking about asking that question. Is that, you got a question? Yes, ma'am. That's a great question. And you know what? What is it when you ask a question, but it's really got a... You're like teaching a lesson even though you're asking the question? Anyway, that's a very great question. The question was, wouldn't the Big Bang destroy whatever the Big Bang created if it's an explosion? And I think that's a great question. Put it this way, to kind of illustrate it, Dan Jenkins' son, Jonathan, just wrote a book in the last couple of months. Or he wrote it, I'm sure, well before that, but it was printed. Any of you think that Jonathan Jenkins' book is the product of an explosion in a print shop? No one thinks that. Maybe the nice vehicle that you drove here. Anyone think that is the product of a catastrophe? No. And so it's hard for me to believe that the fine-tuned... Now, this, evolutionists believe that we live in a fine-tuned universe full of laws of physics that if you changed much at all, you would have catastrophe in our universe. We live on planet Earth that revolves around the sun, leaving a straight inch, according to scientists, 1/9 of an inch every 18 miles on average. And they say if you change that by just 1/10 of an inch... life would be unable to be lived on this earth as we know it. Well, how could you have that kind of precision and all of that come about accidentally by a Big Bang? Well, there's a lot of information out there on the design in the universe, and I would contend that kind of design, you can go to apologeticspress.org, click on creation evolution, click on design in the universe, and you can see a lot of different information. A lot of that information are quotations from evolutionists who have admitted to the finely tuned universe in which we live, which, as you just asked, how can you live in a fine-tuned universe? I mean, we're not floating up in space. We can live here. We're sitting here. You're sitting here right now on planet Earth that is rotating on its axis. If I remember correctly, 1,000 miles an hour, and we experience a new day every 24 hours, 24,000 miles around at the equator. How are we doing that? And we're still sitting here, sitting still. I mean, I realize there's scientific explanations for that. But what I'm saying is there's design and there's order there. I see I get to preaching after you ask some of these questions and probably get carrying on a little bit. A few more questions. Yes, ma'am.
Is there an explanation for like how the little ball of matter that exploded? Like, is there an explanation about how that, like, came into being?
Okay, that's a great question. There are a lot of different theories that are out there. One of the last ones that I heard, I have it right here. I don't have it up on the screen, but I want to show you. In recent weeks, I guess in the last few months, there was a man by the name of Stephen Hawking. Anyone here ever heard of Stephen Hawking? Probably one of the most famous, I think he's a physicist in the world. He came out on a show called Curiosity. It was a show that was on Discovery Channel, I believe it was. And he came out with tried to explain where that little ball of matter came from. And let me see if I can get to it here. I made up a slide or two recently. Of course, you can't see this, but I wanted to read the direct quotations from Stephen Hawking. This is what he said. All right, here we go. He said that space and energy were spontaneously created in the Big Bang. Spontaneous is the idea it came from virtually nothing. Okay? And then he said, what caused the Big Bang? And he said, nothing caused the Big Bang. That's a direct quotation from Stephen Hawking in this show called... what was the show called exactly? It was called Did God Create the Universe? It was in the series called Curiosity on the Discovery Channel. And so he said that nothing created the Big Bang. And he did allegedly, he said, though, the Big Bang came from a vacuum. Now, again, I'm not a cosmologist, an astrophysicist. I have a friend who majored in astrophysics or got his PhD in that from the University of Alabama. And so I get to chat with him sometimes about these matters. But I'm no expert in this, and I quote some of these folks. Alexander Villikan wrote in his 2006 book, Many Worlds in One, he said in response to, he didn't respond to Stephen Hawking, but we can line up his thought next to Stephen Hawking's, who said that basically the Big Bang all came out of, everything came out of a vacuum. He said, vacuum or empty space has energy and tension. It can bend and warp, so it is unquestionably something. So what we've seen in evolutionary science, in atheistic evolutionary thoughts, are a redefinition of words. The idea is, how did the Big Bang come about? What did it come from? Where did that little ball of matter came from? Some people, as we showed last night, would just say it came from nothing. But then nothing oftentimes is redefined as something. And what Alexander Villikan said was, wait a minute, what you're calling nothing is actually something. After explaining what he believes happened, what Stephen Hawking believes happened 14 billion years ago, Hawking said this. He says that is exactly what happened at the start of the universe. I just thought, I put that in this slide. Sorry, I can't let you see it right now. Thought it was into, here's a man who believes that a Big Bang occurred 14 billion years ago. And that it came about from nothing, which he basically, if I remember correctly, kind of described as a vacuum. And then he has the audacity to say, that is exactly how it happened. I'm going to tell you, young people, we wouldn't have a clue how this happened. Except the only one who was in existence at that time told us a few things about how it happened. When he said, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was on the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters, and God said, let there be light, and there was light. And then he continues with the 6 days of creation after that. That being a part of day one of creation. The only reason that we know about our origins is because God has revealed it to us. And I would contend that everything that we see in the world today, everything that has been studied, I believe that the open, honest-hearted person would say it lines up perfectly with God's Word. I know that there would be many people who would disagree with me, but I believe that is an accurate statement. David, how long do we want to go? Just 5 or 10 more minutes, or just as... Okay. Again, I'm happy to stick around as long as you need me to. I don't know if you can tell, but I love being able to talk about these things. I love young people. I love older people. I love the church, and if I can help you today, feel free to catch me before we leave. I had a question back here in the back.
Are you just halos?
I'm not. I'm sorry. What is that called again?
Polonium halos.
I've only ever heard of it, but I couldn't talk intelligently about that. I'm sorry.
Can I say something?
Yo, please, go right ahead.
Amazing.
Fascinating. And, you know, those are the kind of things I want you all to be exposed to. That is, I want you all to hear the other side of the story. I want you all to hear and see and know about some of these amazing things that scientists have studied that do not get the time of day in your science textbooks and that most people simply do not know about. Yes, ma'am.
Many people took some dinosaurs with
them. That's a very good question. What we know is this. When you go around and you see or read about the different big dinosaur graveyards, it's not like they had, you know, services and they buried dinosaurs. It was destructive graveyards that they have in various places around the world. Alberta, Canada, the Colorado-Utah border. I believe If I'm not mistaken, in Tanzania, Africa, there's one. But you can go, for example, to the Colorado-Utah border and see approximately 10,000 jumbled dinosaur bones that are just kind of on the side of this hill in sandstone. And the explanation that they give there, and that is given most of the time, I think I could safely say 90%+ of the time, in regard to these various dinosaur graveyards around the world, and it's not like that's the only; those are the only places that they found dinosaur bones, is this. A local flash flood or a seasonal flood or something where these animals died very rapidly with a lot of water. We have an article about that on our website where we've shown how in this place, in this place, in that place, it's a local flood, a seasonal flood, a flash flood. And my response to that is this. Well, instead of, 100 localized floods around the world, which certainly there have been floods for thousands of years, localized floods, which is another reason I believe that the biblical flood is a worldwide flood, that the answer, and I believe the better explanation for all of those dinosaur graveyards, is the worldwide flood of Noah's day. Now, does that mean that Noah didn't take any animals, any dinosaurs on the ark? I don't believe so. I believe that he could have just as easily taken dinosaurs on the ark, especially considering the average dinosaur. Last night, again, I was listening to this skeptic on YouTube who was just laughing at Christians for alleging that dinosaurs could be on the ark because they were too big and the ark was too small. Yeah, they could have taken very small dinosaurs. And furthermore, we've already mentioned that even evolutionists have contended. The most famous evolutionary fossil hunter in the world contends that the average dinosaur is only the size of a large cow, smaller than the African elephants. So I believe that Noah could have just as easily taken small dinosaurs on the ark, just as easily he could have taken bears on the ark. And, one time I had a conversation with a gentleman who was just laughing at the idea of Noah living on an ark with dinosaurs. And I said, well, would you ever hang out with bears and lions? No, he wouldn't want to do that. But, Noah, he hung out with, you might say, all these different animals that you and I would be scared to death of today. There you go. Any animal that could not have survived outside of the ark was on the ark. Now, was there a miraculous element there? Sure, just like Adam, he wasn't scared of the animals. At least there's no indication of that in Genesis chapter 1, because the fear of man hadn't been put on the animals and vice versa there until after the flood. Read Genesis chapter 9, verses 1 and following there. Really interesting passage about it appears that there was a different relationship between man and animals at creation and before the flood, and then changed radically after the flood. Another question. Go right ahead.
Okay.
Great question. If we evolved from monkeys, why are there still monkeys today? Very good question. And here is their response to that. Their response is, well, we didn't really evolve from monkeys. We evolved from ape-like creatures, allegedly millions of years ago. And from those ape-like creatures, you got the monkeys and you got man. So that's why you still have... But I think it's still a valid question. It still is, okay, so what is everything evolving into today? What are we evolving into? And their response is, well, it's just happening so slowly that you can't really tell what we're evolving into. Anyway, sorry, that's my response to that. Yes? I don't know. Why aren't those ape? Well, I guess they would say those ape-like creatures aren't around anymore because those ape-like creatures evolved into... That's a great question. Those ape-like creatures evolved into orangutans and monkeys and this and us, and they're not around anymore. So I guess I think they would just say they're extinct. A good question. You all have... Yeah, you all ask a lot of questions. That's good, though. That's great. I think being inquisitive is wonderful. It's a great way to learn. Yes, ma'am?
Only our bears and all that, right?
No, it would mean the bear kind, that they had a bear on the ark. They didn't have to be of every different variety of bear.
So then how did the variety come into
it? It's a great question. And here I think that the best, most simple answer to that is this. When you look around this room today, you have a lot of varieties of humans, and we all came from Noah and his wife, their three sons and their wives. So 8 people repopulated this entire earth. And some of us have brown hair, some of us have blonde hair, some of us have darker skin, some of us have lighter skin. And it was all God built all of that into the genetic code and to humanity's DNA. So that, who knows what that dog was like on the ark. I mean, I think it would be great to be able to go back and just, you know, see a video of all the animals that walked off of that ark. You know, it would be amazing to see. But I think that's the best answer. Yes, sir. Good, very good point. Great, yeah, I didn't think about that. Yeah, there were two of every kind of unclean animal, if I remember correctly, and seven pair of every clean animal. It may be that all of them were, but two, but there still would have been a variety. For example, if you had two bears, you know, one of them could have been a polar bear, one of them could have been a grizzly bear or whatever. So there would have been variety. And I don't know if we know exactly, I don't think the text tells us exactly how many of the seven pair were sacrificed. I think we normally assume that since there were two of all of the unclean, that maybe he would have sacrificed all of the clean except two, but that might be an assumption that cannot be proven. I'm sure. Great questions. Hey, we'll just keep rolling. Y'all thought you were leaving. They got more questions. We'll keep going here. Now, say that one more time. I'm not. I don't know how they would use that to say there couldn't be a flood. I'm not really sure. Yeah. Well, I know there were at least two of every animal, kind of animal. And again, if I said, okay, I'm going to go down to the market today where they're selling cows. Maybe they don't do this in America so much, but in other countries they might. And I'm just going to go pick up two cows, take them home. And who knows, one of them might be a Holstein and one of them might be a Brangus. I don't know my cows real well. I'm sorry. And so I have two cows. They're different, but they're going to reproduce. And they're the cows that will come from those, just like the, put it this way, you can have two human beings, a man and a woman, and one can be very dark-skinned, one can be very light-skinned, and they have kids. Let's say they have 10 kids. You know, some of those kids are going to be, and we have a science teacher back there who studies this and teaches this, some of those kids are going to be very dark-skinned, some of them are going to be very light-skinned, some of them are going to be just a good mixture of the two. I forgot what's the word I'm looking for there, just medium-skinned. What's the word? Right. Again, those are good questions. It's hard to be, you know, specifically nailed down. Well, here's the precise answer to that. But I don't see anything there that would contradict or would really should cause a person to say, no, this could not happen or did not happen that way. All right, I'm going to hand it back over to David. Listen, look forward to being with y'all in the morning if you can. Is it 9 o'clock and 10 o'clock, David? Is that right? Look forward to some other things. And hopefully some of the things we'll talk about tomorrow, maybe some of your other questions will be answered during that time period.